black German gunships closed tight around his own craft. John Rourke wheeled the captured Soviet machine 180 degrees on its main rotor axis and fell into the center of the formation. Flak, fired from mobile anti-aircraft batteries, exploded around them. Shoulder-fired surface-to-air missiles filled the sky. Several of the German gunships were already damaged, one of them aflame. But the formation held, all aircraft still aloft. They flew over an ice field that stretched in all directions below them as far as Rourke could see. German J-7V vertical takeoff and landing fighter bombers with fresh coatings of Arctic camouflage screamed out of the snow-heavy clouds from the north and across the airfield in high-speed, low-altitude strafing runs. The Allied goal was to keep as much as possible of the massive Elite Corps installation at Guriev, where the Ural River met the Caspian Sea, intact, so that once taken, the field and its extensive synth fuel dumps could be used as a staging area for the impending Allied assault on the Soviet underground city in the Ural Mountains. This thrust, in conjunction with a simultaneous attack on the Soviet underwater facility in the Pacific, if successful, would be the last battle of a war that raged across the planet for more than five centuries. From the main portion of the fuselage behind him, albeit well back from the cockpit, John's son Michael and John's friend Paul Rubinstein reloaded their weapons. The four of them, Michael, Paul, John, and Natalia Anastasia Chemarovna, commandeered the Soviet gunship after completing their sabotage mission on the base prior to the attack. Below, visible through the Soviet gunship's chin bubble, the main helicopter hangar, the smaller hangar that housed Soviet fighter bombers, and the field's main control tower all lay in fiery ruins. In the co-pilot seat beside John Rourke, Natalia Chemarovna removed the short blonde wig she wore when they infiltrated the base disguised as Soviet Elite Corps personnel. Her real hair beneath the wig, so dark a brown it was almost a true black, cascaded to her shoulders. She shook her hair free, then put the headset back to her ear and resumed tuning the frequency scanner on the radio. Their eyes met. Rourke made a conscious effort to look away from Natalia and back to what he should be looking at, the controls of the helicopter.
John, listen! It's Sam! I'll put this on speaker!
Natalia had picked up transmissions from the commando teams that went after Guriev's primary anti-aircraft batteries. The teams led by Major Otto Hammerschmidt of New Germany and U.S. Marine Corps Captain Sam Aldridge of Midway were still on the ground. She put Aldridge's call to New Germany's Supreme Commander Wolfgang Mann on the speaker.
I say again, knockout one to Snowbird leader. We have total control of Objective Alpha. Say again, total control of Objective Alpha. Over.
Knockout one, this is Snowbird leader. Knockout two reports similar results. Can you hold your position? Over.
Snowbird leader, this is knockout one. Resistance minimal. We can hold, but would appreciate air support against platoon strength enemy unit approaching rapidly from map coordinates G15. Need that ASAP. Enemy unit is armed with at least one energy weapon, and we are currently receiving moderately heavy incoming mortar fire. Please advise. Knockout one over.
Rourke took up Natalia's headset.
Snowbird leader, this is Rourke in Soviet helicopter KHR-333-658. We can interdict enemy forces at coordinates G15 if Knockout 1 can talk us in. Over.
Yes, Herr Doctor, but do you copy this, Knockout 1? Over.
Affirmative, Snowbird leader. We can talk the Doctor in. Over.
Very well, Doctor. Snowbird leader out.
Sam, ETA's about 2 minutes. Over.
I copy that, Doctor. Knockout 1 out.
Rourke out.
John handed back the headset.
Can I change frequencies for a minute? I want to hear what else is going on.
Sure.
Michael leaned over between their seats.
Gonna try the energy weapon, Dad?
That's what I'm thinking, Mike.
John called his son by his nickname perhaps 3 times in his life. Michael clapped him on the shoulder.
John, after that energy pulse we took a couple of minutes ago, you think the wiring can stand to use the energy weapon we have aboard?
As best I can tell, the rotation of the main rotor is constantly recharging the power supply, Paul. We should be all right, even on emergency power as we are. Because the system shouldn't interconnect.
All I wanted to know.
Rourke put the machine into a climb and banked to starboard, clearing the other helicopters. The J-7Vs moved out to the south, the lead elements of the attack formation already maneuvering into position for a second strafing run, but selective this time, in support of the paratroopers once the men touched down. Already through the overhead bubble, Rourke could see the first of the chutes open in the sky well above their machine. Many of these parachutists weren't parachutists at all, only drones. Similar in concept and purpose to those used by the Allies during pre-dawn portions of the D-Day invasion in June of 1944, near the close of World War II. Articulated dummies, miniaturized to perfect scale with their smaller parachutes, they were airdropped in conjunction with actual paratroopers, providing a greater number of targets to draw fire from enemy personnel on the ground. They cut the number of real casualties and deceived the enemy into believing he faced a larger force. More chutes opened. Rourke increased the Soviet machine's speed so he could clear the area before any of the chutes got too close.
I'm switching back to Sam's frequency, John.
Paul and I can set up door guns.
Go for it.
Rourke checked his compass coordinates.
Get Sam to talk us in on that enemy platoon.
Natalia, to knockout one. Natalia, to knockout one. Come in, knockout one.
As Natalia worked to raise Sam, Rourke began descending, following the terrain to minimize the enemy's chances for establishing visual contact.
John! Stay on current course. We should be over their position in 30 seconds. The Soviet platoon is advancing from 300 meters due east.
Rourke activated the gunship's heads-up display, searching for the correct map grid, then made a mental fix on the relative position of the advancing enemy platoon. He locked the auto-navigator system on the coordinates. For the first time since leaving the airfield, he looked behind him along the interior of the fuselage. He saw Michael and Paul mounting Soviet heavy machine guns on rotating tripods at either side of the aircraft just inside the open doors. Rourke's eyes flashed to the heads-up display. Auto-navigation was bringing the gunship in along a broad arc from the west to the south that would intersect the enemy unit's assumed line of movement, but he thought of a better idea. John adjusted the unit's controls. No need for his full attention to navigation just yet. The helicopter banked slowly, evenly, to port. Rourke's goal in modifying the flight plan was to come up on the attacking Soviet platoon from the rear. He had no desire to serve as target practice for the enemy energy weapons.
I see them, John!
Rourke nodded. He switched off auto-navigation.
We have a full charge on the energy weapon!
We're ready, John!